You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to Weekly, the show where we recap the week as well as dive into the juicy talking points from it. Remember, premium supporters of Eurogamer get these episodes every Friday, whereas everyone else listens from Monday. And you can find out more about that below or on the Eurogamer.net website, which is lovely. Sorry we haven't had an episode for a week or two. I've been away, and we wanted to wait until we could talk about EGX London, which happened this past weekend. I hope you had a nice time if you were there. I'm Bertie, a longtime writer for Eurogamer, and I'm joined today by our reporter intern, Liv. Hello, Liv.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good, good. And we're also joined by our editor-in-chief, Martin Robinson. Hello, Martin.
Hello, how's it going?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. I've got the heating on for the first time in the shed, which is quite exciting. I said it's quite exciting, also obviously very expensive as well. So I've been doing most of my work in my little Strandman over there, cuddled up by my little heater. It's quite nice.
I really want a Strandman. That's top of my... I've got nowhere to put one.
But I don't want to boast, but I've got three. I'm boasting.
All right. No need to flex.
Straight in there. I've got one in my daughter's room, one in our bedroom, which I read in, and the one over there, which is my gaming chair.
Well, if you ever need to get rid of one, I'm your man.
There, I highly recommend Strandmans. Matt Reynolds has got a reclining Strandman, I think, as well. There's
no
different varieties, yeah.
That feels like peak middle-aged / maybe older.
No, I think peak middle-age is actually having three.
I'm older than no, you Matt, can...
Peak middle-age is actually having three Strandmans. So that's when you know you really are over the hill.
I need to get cracking. Okay, so I know you were both at EGX because I saw you there. That sounds creepy. It wasn't creepy, I hope. So let's talk about it. What did you think? Because this was the first time EGX has been back properly, really, unimpeded by COVID restrictions. What did you think of it, Liv? Was this your first time at an EGX?
That was my first time ever going to EGX. So I was kind of... they're trying to look cool and be like, yeah, I'm here with Eurogamer, and also like doing like being like in tourist mode, being like, oh, I'm gonna play all the games, I'm gonna buy all the merch.
I am always in tourist mode. That is my default thing, even after however many years that I've been at them. Now I've basically been at everyone. I think maybe there was one that I wasn't at, but I still tourist, and it still never fails to kind of impress me and also energize me seeing people walking around being happy playing games. Martin, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I like, I should say, obviously, we are obviously owned by the people who run EGX, but our views are independent and everything. But I loved it. I had a cracking time. I think something you just touched on there as well, it's just really nice seeing people again. I think especially after the last few years and everything, and having been locked away in my sheds, it's so nice just to walk the show floors basically and bump into people. Sometimes some of you haven't seen for a couple of years for obvious reasons. And that's part of the magic of the show, and that's what's really wonderful about it. But it was nice seeing it a bit more back to kind of strength, because like last year's EGX was the first one back. And it was a bit quieter. There was quite a lot of space on the floor. I don't think it's still like up to back to maybe where it was pre-pandemic, but it felt like a step in the right direction with a lot less empty show floor space, a lot more games there, and a lot more stuff going on. There was more stuff to play. Having said that, I feel really bad. There's so much cool stuff to play, and still invariably I'm just drawn to the Outrun 2 arcade cabinet, and just that one arcade cabinet even, and just queuing up to play this busted old arcade cabinet from the 80s.
Yeah, because there's this whole retro zone. For those of you who haven't been to EGX, there's this whole retro zone with arcade cabinets and also just old games, old consoles and older games playing, which is inevitably... And it stays open a bit later than the rest of the show as well. So you can have a drink at the nearby bar and then just go and play old games. And it's amazing how many people it attracts. And you're like, these are games from ages ago. And yet people are drawn to them. It felt like there was a positive buzz at the show from where I was standing. I know that there is a problem, like you said, it's not necessarily back to full strength. I know that there is a problem with publishers, companies, developers having playable code for their games, which seems like an odd thing to have a problem because they're obviously building the game, but it actually takes a concerted effort to kind of siphon off resources to build these playable parts of games. And because shows like E3 and Gamescom, E3 wasn't really there, so because these game shows are still coming back, people aren't really putting that effort in. But maybe from next year, E3 is back. So perhaps then there will be a proper concerted effort by the industry to have playable code and big presence and stuff like this.
Yeah, like you said, like actually getting the playable code is actually a sizable task for game developers. So it's difficult sometimes for them to do it if they haven't got the resources for it. And so it has had an impact. And it also is like, there just aren't that many big games at the moment as well. Obviously, as we know full well, there's been a kind of a dearth because of COVID has hit production schedules as well. And so there's not that much out there basically at the moment. And I think we had a fairly good representation of some pretty decent big games and obviously all the cool indie stuff as well, which is kind of feels like the heart of a lot of EGX.
Yeah, so talking of the games that were there, the bigger games that were there, one of the main draws was Street Fighter VI. And I know you went to play this, Martin. I think you fought against Wes, is that correct?
Yeah, I won't tell you how it went. Wes is really, really good at Street Fighter. I think he claims he's the best journo. I think he's got a fair claim to that. It's between him, Nathan Brown, who's also really good, and Ryan King, who's now not a journo anymore. So I think Wes might have taken the crown. Now Ryan's moved on into PR. Wes is really, really good at Street Fighter. And even with the help of the new kind of easy controls on Street Fighter 6 and playing it Smash Brothers style, and just basically just trying to confuse him by not knowing what I'm doing, which I think is the best. It's the best, like, when you're approaching a pro, sometimes the best thing to do is, like, they're expecting someone of pro tactics who knows what they're doing. If you literally just confuse them just by being as random as possible, by just doing what they never expect, then that's how I got my one win off him across like 12 matches.
Yeah, because there's always that thing in Street Fighter that I remember from years ago that you could have been playing it for hours and hours and you could know the movesets of characters, but then someone could come along, like a newcomer, a bit like in poker almost, and because they're not playing by the rules that everyone else seems to be playing by, they can upset you and kind of sneak a win before you work out what they're doing.
They don't know what they're doing, yeah.
How is the game? Is it good? Does it feel like... Because Street Fighter V was... I don't know if people were in love with Street Fighter V in the same way that they were with 4.
Yeah, well, so 4 was like the big comeback after... What was it? So that came out in 2010, I think it was. I'm going to get my dates wrong, so forgive me. But that came out after...
Street Fighter 4 was one of the games that was at the very first EGX, for those that remember.
It was like, I think Street Fighter 4 came out when I first started doing this whole writing about games thing. And it was such a big deal because of it, a Street Fighter coming back from years in the wilderness. 3 was obviously quite a hardcore thing. And Street Fighter 4 like felt like the first time that Street Fighter was like relevant and big again since Street Fighter 2, since the early days of the 90s. And it was such a big deal. It felt like it was a phenomenon again. Street Fighter 5 kind of lost a bit of that momentum with a few interesting decisions from Capcom. I think they lost their way with it a little bit, turned it round, but by the time they turned it round, it never got its moment in the limelight. Basically, it never got that moment where it was like Street Fighter's gone mainstream again, whereas 6 feels like it's got a bit of wind behind it, and it feels like it has captured imagination a bit more. And also Capcom just know what they're doing right now. Like Capcom is on such a good run at the moment with Monster Hunter Broke the West, finally that did really well. Resident Evil, having been mediocre for ages, is now really good again. And now this is the revived Capcom, who's just been smashing out the park for the last like 4 or 5 years, having a crack at Street Fighter and doing a really good job of it. By basically, I don't get into the nuts and bolts of it because of A, I don't know what I'm talking about, and also there's quite a lot. But they've like smashed together every single type of Street Fighter basically. And so it's got all the systems from like 3, 4 and 5 all together. And it's kind of a Street Fighter for everyone. And in that as well, it's a Street Fighter, which everyone can play. So you don't need to know all the quarter circles and Dragon Punch stuff and some of the more arcane inputs. There's like a modern command thing where you can play it like Smash Brothers, basically. So you can just basically, just to do a fireball, you can just press it's just directional input. So it's like right and punch. And then you can do a fireball. And so a Dragon Punch, it's up and punch, as opposed to having to do the backwards and which obviously, like, we all know, us oldos, from, it's like muscle memory, because I've been pulling off that move since, oh my god, 30 years now. I've been doing fireballs and Dragon Punches, which is ridiculous. Don't laugh, Liv. it's cool having that there. So it's kind of hopefully attracting a newer crowd to Street Fighter as well. I just have it on the show floor at EGX as well. It's such a perfect show game because of, obviously, it's got its roots in the arcade. And when I first played Street Fighter and everything in the 90s, it was that thing you went and go and played in the arcade. And the old I Got Next thing where you queue up and watch people playing it and then look forward to taking someone on. It's kind of a public thing. And having it in a public space like that, it felt like the right place for it, basically. And also, it attracted loads of people and loads of people overstaying there. I think you're supposed to have like 3 matches on there, but me and Wes were on there for 12. And they tried to kick us off, but and there's just loads of people just grabbed loads of people. I think just spent the entire day basically just playing it, and then going to the back of the queue and playing it again. But because of it's that kind of game that inspires that kind of obsession. It's very good. In short.
Good, I'm looking forward to it. So, Liv, you played a couple of the other bigger games at the show. So let's do Woe Long first, and then we'll come to the other mystery game for now.
Yeah, I really wish that I had a little bit more time with Woe Long, because obviously as a Soulsborne-esque game, it's meant to be difficult. So I managed to beat, there was this big tiger kind of monster. I managed to beat that, and then just as I'd beaten that and gone to the next bit of the area ahead of it, it was like, thanks for playing the demo. And I was like, oh no, let me play more. I really enjoy it. Obviously it's probably not for everyone given the whole difficulty spike of it, but I really liked it. I really want to try more of the martial arts stuff. So you can use martial arts to do different actions and different abilities. And there was one, my favorite one, was the one that let you move a big distance. I was like, get out of the way of the swipes. Yeah. And I think I like that it's going for the kind of the Sekiro thing with where there's a focus on stance and guarding and trying to counter at the right time to parry. So I really enjoyed it. I'm really looking forward to getting it when it comes out.
Nice, that's exciting, because I feel like all Souls-like games have an uphill battle just trying to get on that same sort of perceived tier as the From Software games. So I think it's quite difficult to stand alongside those games. So it's nice when people come away from them kind of infused rather than it's not quite as good as, or... So, talking about being enthused, the other game that you played was Mr. Needle Mouse. I discovered from doing a quiz that this was the original name of Sonic the Hedgehog. So, you played Sonic Frontiers, and from what you said, I don't think you were that impressed.
I went into it with not really much expectations. I was quite open-minded. Much like the open world of Sonic Frontiers. And much like the open world of Sonic Frontiers, I came back feeling a bit empty from it.
Wow, in 2 sentences, you've just done a review. There we go.
Yeah, it was just weird. Like, the demo started off with a bunch of cutscenes. And I skipped them. Because I'm playing a demo. I'm not here to kind of watch a short movie before I start playing. It just put you in this sort of foresty area, and then you were just meant to explore and learn the mechanics. And it just feels just empty.
I wonder if, like, part of the problem with Sonic is that you need empty space in order to have space for the speed to run around. Martin, have you tried Sonic Frontiers?
So I played it when they first hands on of it, which was at GefCon back in June. So I played it there, and it looked rough as anything. It's come on a long way since. It's been really impressive to see how it's kind of moved on since then. That's back in June. And I think it's a lot of the same content basically that I played back then, but a lot more polished. It ran like pure ass on them back then. It was like it was running on PCs and at like sub 720p at about 30 frames per second if you're lucky. And I was like, wow, I'm surprised they're showing this. But I kind of, being Mr. Contrarian, I really liked it back then, mainly because I'd like to like things that people don't. And now it's annoying. Now people all of a sudden are like, oh, Sonic Frontiers is good again, so maybe we're going to have to join you live and be like, actually, because everyone else likes it. It's interesting, which is, I think, more than you can say for some of the more recent Sonic, Team Sonic games, especially the 3D ones. And I am, like, I'm optimistic. I like the fact they're doing something a bit different with it. I think they really needed to after Sonic Forces, which was shit. And I think there's some good ideas in there, but like, yeah, like you say, Liv, it does feel a bit empty, and sometimes you're like, I'm not quite sure about this because I'm not sure this is the right avenue for it. Did you get to play like the more guided traditional Sonic level, the Cyber Highway one, or whatever it's called?
Was that when you like went to the big statue thing? And I did that at the very beginning of the demo, because when you started, it was like, find a way forward. So I immediately turned around and looked behind me, and I was like, oh, there's a thing to interact with. And then all of a sudden I was doing like the more classic levels, and I was like, how do I play?
Yeah, I think that's the best. The older traditional Sonic stuff in it is quite twice traditional. It is still like 3D Sonic. But I quite like that. It was quite well done. I'm just curious to know how it's all going to hang together, because I think it's an interesting idea. The execution is there in some places, maybe not in others, but it's a Sonic game which I'm actively looking forward to playing out of curiosity, maybe more than anything else, and I've not been able to say that for a long time about the series. So outside of kind of obviously like Sonic Mania and stuff like that, but in terms of mainline Sonic game, it's interesting, which is something.
So another game that seemed to have some buzz at the show, I know this because I was asking some people, and this is why I went to hunt this game out, and Liv, you also played this as well, is a game called Wild Frost, made by the developer Chucklefish. And this, in my head, is a mash of Magic the Gathering and Slay the Spire, in that, so it's a card game, but you have a couple of rows, and you play creatures into those rows. So you have like a hero, and if they die, you're dead, but you also have some heroes you play, the hero you play as well, actually, but you play other creatures as well, and then they have a kind of countdown clock on these characters and your hero, and when your countdown clock gets to the bottom, your character automatically hits, but you can also hit with other cards, so you can play like a hit card and then you do some damage somewhere. So yeah, there's a bunch of things going on, and annoyingly I didn't know there was a tutorial in the game, so I spent about 20 minutes or 15 minutes just playing this game blind, going, I want to know what to do, because it does feel quite different. Was it confusing to you at all, Liv, when you started?
Not in the sense that I didn't play the tutorial. I did play the tutorial. It was it was confusing in the sense of trying to, of sort of wrapping your head around the counter, the turn-based system of it, because that's something that in like the deck games that I've played, like I played Slay the Spire and Monster Train. It's a complete, it's like a very different dynamic to those games, where you can play more than one card during a turn, and it's all kind of based on energy. Whereas this was, you really have to sort of focus on like energy management a lot more than I feel like you would in like Slay the Spire.
Yeah, so when you play a card in Wild Frost, it acts like a turn. So you play a card and then the counter ticks down, and that's really where you need to keep your eye. So unlike in Monster Train, is another good game, a comparison, because in that game, you have like a line, like a horizontal line, and you can play creatures in it, and the creature at the front of the line is going to take the damage. So it's a bit about how you order people as well. But then you also have to pay attention to the enemies have certain attacks that are certain abilities that you have to keep in mind as well. It's quite there's a few different mechanics going on that makes it kind of feel different and jars initially. But once you get the hang of it, it's good, and there seems to be quite a lot of depth there. And it's also like a gorgeous package as well. The art is really almost Hearthstone-y, and it's sort of slightly enlarged, cartoony. So it's a very appealing game to sit down and play, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really good. And also, I don't know if you listened to it as well, because when I first started playing it, I was chatting to the people at the booth, and then one of the ladies was like, put on the headphones and listen to it. And I was like, oh my gosh, the music was really, really just joyful.
I didn't, sadly. I had a similar thing when I was sitting down playing in the Left Field Zone. There was a game called, this game, by the way, Wild Frost, is coming out next year. So there's a little bit of time to wait for that. But keep an eye on it. It could be the next big sort of deck building kind of card game. I was playing this game called Lakeside, which is this side on pixel art. I'm a sucker for anything pixel art, city building game. And I was talking, the guy demoing it was the composer, and I'm sitting there playing it, not listening to the music. And he must have been thinking, you jerk. Like, why have you sat down playing my... I don't know, something about putting headphones on, I just didn't want to, it sort of cuts off my, one of my senses. There was a game I needed headphones for, though. Lakeside is out today on Steam, incidentally. It's cute. I suggest you look at it if you like city builder games. There was a game, a Morse code game, a mash of Morse code and Battleships, and the game is called Morse, not Inspector Morse, just Morse. There's a demo on Steam if you fancy trying it. And the idea is you have to you switch lines. There's like the playing space is divided into lines, and ships come down these lines, and you switch lines and then skip spaces depending on the Morse code you're inputting. So you have to sort of look at the Morse code legend on one side, and while you're trying to sort of Morse code, it's quite nice. I guess you have that whole like World War II era in a submarine vibe going on. I also played this game called Secrets of Soil, which is a free game you can get now. It's more of like an educational voyage, like literally into the soil in the ground, and as you're flying around, this kind of visualization of it, it's telling you all the stuff you're seeing there, you know, how all these kind of fungal networks under the groundwork, and how what worms do to the soil, and you see these big worms coming along and stuff. It was quite interesting, quite nice, I thought. Was there anything else you played, Liv, that we haven't touched on?
No, I was only there for a short time, so I prioritized Wolong and Sonic, and then I played Wild Frost after that, and then I was kind of beat, and I was like, I'm gonna do my shopping.
Did you get some good shopping though?
The Piplup that sits, the Piplup was from there. That's the only one I'll show. Let's just leave it at that. We don't need to see my shameful.
I didn't have any time to do any merch shopping. I was hosting a pub quiz. Thanks to anyone who came from that and is listening to this. I'm definitely going to do one next time, and it's going to be even bigger and better. And I promise not to throw sweets at people's faces this time. Or maybe I will. I got a chance to see Ox Venture Live, which I've never seen before, and I was chuckling along to that. That's a nice vibe. There's a nice kind of energy in the room. There was one game I didn't get a chance to play, but I really wanted to. Rock Paper Shotgun had this kind of future of play area where this Morse game was, that was based around sort of not novelty but maybe quirky kind of game ideas, and they had this sort of distorted pool table, like a literal physical real pool table, and one of the corners looked like it had been sort of warped up in one side. And it's amazing how you can take a game so known as that, and then just by sort of making one quite significant change, you just alter the whole way it plays. I thought that was very clever. And
I didn't get to play it either, but I just stood and watched people play it for a good 5 minutes, because like I say, it's such a simple concept and such a profound change to such a fundamental game. It's incredible. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah. Moving on quickly, because we haven't had an episode for a couple of weeks, there's been a flurry of reviews. We're getting into review season now as lots of new games come out. Some of the games we've reviewed recently, we've had Hellsinger, Return to Monkey Island, a game called Hyper Demon, which Donna really liked, Shovel Knight Dig, Grounded, which has finally come out of Early Access, The Excavation of Hobbs Barrow, which comes out this week, which is an adventure game, which I'm quite excited about playing. And all of those games are recommended because that's the only score we give games these.
That's a conversation of the day. So, because we like games, what's wrong with liking games, eh?
Nothing. It's because we picked this game. So anyway, it's another conversation. We gave an essential to Road Warden, which we reviewed a couple of weeks ago now. A kind of along the lines of Disco Elysium, a kind of wordy RPG, but more on the sort of pixel art side and fantasy. It looks lovely, and I'm excited about playing this as well. Talking of essential games, Once Upon a Time, Deathloop came out this week on Xbox, having been exclusive to PlayStation for a year, and Tunic came to Switch and PlayStation, having been exclusive to Xbox and PC for 6 months, that one. But the big review this week, which I think is going up anytime soon, it hasn't quite happened now, is of the new FIFA game, which is coincidentally our game of the week, I think, but is also...
That's not necessarily endorsement. That's just because it's the most interesting thing and something I can easily write about for our newsletter. But yeah, it's the most. It obviously is a very interesting release. It's the last ever FIFA, which in itself is interesting. I say last ever. I'm sure the FIFA, the organisation, will do something horrible with it and give it to some awful developer, and it will have a zombie life afterwards and be appalling, as everything FIFA does is. What a nasty institution. Anyway, it's weird though, because the FIFA goes back a long time again. Don't laugh, Liv, but I remember playing the first FIFA in 93, 94, I think it was, when it came out on the Mega Drive. First kind of isometric football game.
All I remember about that game is that you could press two buttons together to shove people.
Yes, the professional foul. Yeah. And also after that, you can do that, and then the referee would try and book you, but you could run away indefinitely from them. And so you could literally just, you could spend hours, like it was an ultimate troll move. You can basically just, someone could be clean on goal, you just shove them over, and then the ref would try and get red card you, but you can just run away from them and just keep that going as long as you wanted to, and they could never catch up with you. It was brilliant to do if you really wanted to wind up mates. So yeah, that was the first FIFA, but that and it's kind of obviously had a very interesting, rich, varied history over that time. And this is the last one, and the review isn't, taps are still writing at the moment, so I can't say too much about it. But I think I know where we're landing with it, and similar to previous years, it was edge case whether it's going to be in a void or not, because of parts of it are plain horrendous. The Ultimate Team stuff, once more, is just grim. Really, really, really grim. I can't get into the details because I'm not really an Ultimate Team player. I wouldn't subject myself to that. But yeah, it's pretty horrible stuff. And once more is the main focus of the game. And yeah, Taps will go into great detail about it. He was getting very upset about it. And then he was basically livid and was right and was basically saying this game was appalling. And then last night he played it with Wes. And then they just played some games together. And then Wes was up until early hours of this morning. Both of them were just playing FIFA like as you do with mates. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know what? If you look aside from all this absolute disgusting nonsense, there is still a really good game of football there. And it's kind of, it's weird because a game as vast as this has so many different kind of use scenarios and everything. Because I play FIFA like that. I'm just downloading it now, and I've got a friend around tonight, and we're going to be 2 40-year-old men in the shed together playing FIFA. We should know better. But I love FIFA for that. It still has that pull to it. And when it comes to playing games with mates, for me, it's still Street Fighter and FIFA. Yeah. Because of I'm a Route 1 basic, very basic person. But it's fantastic for that. And as ever, it plays a really good game of football like that. So it just about salvaged itself, I think, from being in the void.
Oh, yeah, it is one of those games that I would pick up a pad and play, you know, if I was at someone's house, or if, you know, the opportunity was there, I would play a game of FIFA against somebody. It has that eternal pull. It's just a shame that all the other stuff, you know, that in order to sort of, I don't know, monetize it, or that stuff exists, really. Anyway,
I've not engaged. I play FIFA every year and I've never touched Ultimate Team because of, I don't want to. So I think it's possible to play it and avoid that stuff. But it is there, and it is a big focus of it. And so you have to kind of address it. And it's not good, unfortunately.
Yeah. Let's move on. Another game I've just finished reviewing is called Dome Keeper, which is like a base defense and digging game. You have to dig the ground below to sort of improve your base above. And I've got mixed feelings on it, and the review is going to go up today. But I want to move on because I'm conscious of time. So let's take a quick look at news. I'm not going to go around the houses because there's just too much to take in after 2 weeks. So I want to touch quickly on a game called Trombone Champ, which I know both Liv and I have been playing because it's this viral sensation at the moment. Major mainstream newspapers are kind of picking up on this game that seems to have touched everyone. Liv, why do you think people are so impressed by this game?
It's just, it's fun. You don't need to kind of know musical theory or play an instrument or anything. It's very easy to play, but difficult to master, and when you get it wrong, it's just hilarious.
That's the key thing, isn't it? Because so it's a game a bit like, it's a rhythm action game, so a bit like Guitar Hero, but for trombones, which is an inspired idea in and of itself. And trombones, famously, there is no sort of defined note press. You know, like on a trumpet, you press a note and you know, you get a sound. Presume, you know, when you blow some air through. On this, you just have a sliding arm. So you have to know exactly, it's quite big as well. They're quite big instruments. And you have to sort of know exactly where to slide the little handle to produce the sound of the note. And brilliantly in the game, even if you get it slightly wrong, it sounds horrendous. It's like listening to that melodica version of the Jurassic Park theme and how they're genuinely trying to play the song, I think, but it sounds ridiculous. Like, I still laugh at it even years later. And the game, I like, seriously, playing it for an hour or so, I was in stitches. I could actually, you slide the arm around using the mouse just to kind of wiggle up and down, and it's surprisingly hard to land on the right. There's sort of a bit of a delay, kind of, so it sort of soaps around a little bit to land the note. And it's just, it's a bit like playing Surgeon Simulator for the first time, how you sort of, you know what you want to do, but you just can't quite do it. And so trying to match these songs, which are like the most pumped up trombone adaptations of songs I can imagine, just becomes hilarious. It's quite intense. I don't think you could play it for long and still have the same fun, but it was like a burst of, like, you know, half an hour fun for anyone. It's, yeah, it is hilarious.
Is the Johnny Briggs theme tune in there, Bertie?
Oh, yeah, I didn't see it, no.
That feels to me like the essential piece of trombone music. I've yet to play it myself, actually. I really want to try it out.
A great, great party game, just to, people will get it instantly, you know, and laugh instantly. One of those ones where the comedy is so apparent. Also, it feels like there's a love for the trombone in there as well. It doesn't just feel like a lampoon. It sort of feels like people love it. Elsewhere in news, the GTA 6 hacking kind of saga is ongoing, with this 17-year-old who's suspected of hacking Rockstar servers awaiting basically their day in court. They're being held in a youth detention center while that's ongoing, which seems like part of a bigger story about, you know, the punishment, or the crime and punishment systems of various countries catching up with cyber crime and kind of taking this stuff seriously and policing it kind of seriously. I'm sure Rockstar's lawyers are out in force. And there's obviously another story going here about this whole leaking thing around games and whether we should. You know, people are working on this game to unveil it at a certain time anyway, because they don't want people seeing an unfinished game, just like I wouldn't want people reading an unfinished story of one of mine or listening to an unfinished podcast. I don't know if that's the same analogy. On slightly happier news, just to finish this off, Netflix's The Witcher series, season 3 of this, has a sort of release date now, which is summer 2023, which breaks the series' December tradition, because in its place this December is the new Origins spin-off series, Blood Origin. So I'm quite excited about that. So loads of Witcher.
Is that like Blood Oranges? Is that a play on oranges? Is that, that
we
is
should
that
call it Blood Oranges, shouldn't we?
Blood Oranges, yeah.
Blood Oranges.
The Witcher Blood Oranges. That's perfect. People people who know what we're talking about here will be like, oh, I know what you're talking about. I won't over explain.
Never explain.
Okay, that's weekly. That's everything. Thank you, Liv, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on.
You're most welcome. And thank you, Martin, for gracing us with your presence.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Bertie. That was Weekly. And we'll see you next week. Bye for now.